Unfortunately, one of the difficult announcements that you just made, teacher layoffs, always a difficult announcement to make, I'm sure, as a superintendent. I noticed with the issue of English and English language learners, there are about 12 ELA layoffs. Why would you target that particular group of teachers when it's such a need?
It's a very complicated scenario. Essentially, the layoffs that we announced a week ago have their roots in the budget discussions that took place late last winter and into the spring. And it was established at that time that as many as 85 or more positions could be lost. And it was a result of students from Bennett being merged into other high schools, the result of schools being brought together, the Harvey Austin School, for example, and taking a look at what had come about during the last couple of years where we had very low class sizes, particularly at the secondary level. And we were facing a budget crunch. There wasn't the promise of revenues. Sustainable revenues. So the decision was made at that time that we would open the year with fewer positions. Now, the figure that was talked about then was 85 or more. It's a dynamic scenario. So right now we sent out 63 notices. Not all of those will, in fact, be laid off. And we're hoping that as we get closer to the beginning of the school year, that even more will be brought back. It's a timing issue. We have to provide notice. We have to make sure that we live within the means that we have, our budget. I think the nature of those positions is somewhat interesting in the sense that we're growing at pre-K, we're growing in kindergarten, and yet we're adjusting at the secondary level.
Can you update us on the agreement with Johns Hopkins, which is trying to pull out of its partnership with East and Lafayette on those improvement plans?
Again, another situation that has its roots over a year ago when the commissioner provided an order to the district that Lafayette and East High School had certain options. The option that the district chose at that time was to turn those schools over to an EPO, an Educational Partnership Organization. After a selection process, Johns Hopkins was chosen to operate the schools. I think Johns Hopkins, over the course of several months, recognized how difficult it can be to actually be the superintendent of even two schools. And they, at times, struggled. They have a model that they believe is the school turnaround, and it relates to the master schedule. It relates to an ELA in math curricula. It relates to professional development. During the year, they were implementing all of that. And in our most recent conversations, they informed us that they felt that they were going to have difficulty implementing that model to the extent that they have been able to in other places. And their solution was to seek to end the agreement.
But they just can't walk away from that agreement.
Well, these agreements are made. They're three-party agreements, Johns Hopkins, Buffalo, and the commissioner. And the termination clause requires 90 days notice, but to the commissioner. And so far as I know at this point, that has not been received by the commissioner.
In hindsight, was it a mistake to forge a partnership with an out-of-town university? Would it have been better to make a relationship locally?
I don't think there's any question that if you have a qualified local entity, that the logistics are favored by having them, the communication, even the relationships. And there was that option, but the board, in its after its deliberation, decided that Johns was the best choice. I suppose we can always look back and say we should have done this, we should have done that. The reality is now Johns wants to leave. And the Buffalo Public Schools needs to take this year, 14-15, and decide where we go from here. Throughout all of this, the message that I want to reinforce is that both East and Lafayette will open as planned. We will have our curriculum. We will have our schedule. We will have our staff. We'll have the leadership in the buildings. So the goal And the intent is to make that experience for our students and their parents and their families as good or better than it would have been under any other scenario.
How do you fix a failing school?
Very simplistically, there are demands on the schools in general to put a rich curriculum together, to make sure that you're using strategies that bring out those new outcomes that you want, and that you prepare for some very rigorous tests. That all requires training, professional development, communication. And it's not only with our teachers, but it's delivering that message to the students that things will be different than in the past. It's getting parents on board, making sure that they understand the changes and their role in all of this. Still, the primary responsibility lies with the schools. So the challenge for us is to make sure all of our systems are aligned, that professional development, curriculum development, evaluation of staff, utilization of data to inform instruction, that all of those are in place. The Buffalo Public Schools, a very large organization, and it has had its years of success in the past doing things in the way that seemed to be appropriate at the time. Everything is different now, and it's starting with the requirements from the federal government and the state. And unfortunately, there's a press of time, change is something that everybody needs to be convinced will make us better.
And I know you recently spoke to members of the Hispanic community just about that topic. You said there needs to be gain through change.
Yeah, every one of the constituencies, if you will, that we serve has to see that their unique needs are not only understood but accounted for. And Buffalo becoming a very multicultural city, an international city, if you will, language and awareness and respect for cultures and different ways of doing things will be very important to us.
Because certainly when we look at the graduation rates, I know one of the leaders said to you, in her 30-plus years in the district, it has always been an emergency situation with the dropout rate and the poor graduation rates among Hispanic students. How can you focus and address that specifically?
I think language certainly is one of those challenges that we need to overcome, making sure that our ESL teachers and that our principals and our staff understand the strategies for working with students who don't have yet English competency. One of the ways of doing it is to make sure that there is a plan for integrating students with English speakers. And it's not the easy way, but it's a thorough way. Young people are sponges when it comes to language. I just talked to kindergartners and first graders who, in a sense, were ambassadors for their parents. And I have to believe that if one language is spoken in the home, the English must have been gained through the schools. So we'll continue that process.
In one of the things that you mentioned during that speech, you talked about getting students to the table, so to speak, a voice that something has lacked over the years. But this truly sounded like you wanted to bring more student voices to the table.
It's a more nuanced approach, but in every building there's a culture, and across a district there's a culture. And oftentimes adults, in their zeal to do the right thing for young people, to make sure that we have schools that encourage performance, sometimes you look over the human dimension. Adults can communicate their fears and their concerns, and they do it often. Young people oftentimes don't have that opportunity to share the kinds of things that could take place in a building to make life there more supportive of them and a more congenial environment. So, to that end, I will be working with the board in the next probably couple of months to craft out a specific initiative that would have individual staff member devoted to student empowerment, student leadership, so that across our buildings, particularly at the secondary level, we would seek the voice of students, give them opportunities to share things that adults may have overlooked in their enthusiasm and in their sense of a purpose and dedication. It goes down to just about every aspect of life in an urban district. You can't use your own perspective to judge what other people may think.
How do you begin tackling the teachers union contract? About a decade long, it's been sitting there. No one has been able to make an inroad with Buffalo Teacher Federation President Phil Remore. They really have not been able to resolve this.
Contract negotiations is multifaceted. I suppose it has historical roots. 12 years without a contract, it may well rank that contract among the longest unresolved issues in the city. And I think the farther it goes, relationships oftentimes dictate whether or not we'll be successful. But during that 12 years, the economics have affected us as well. We have new programs. We have staff development requirements. We have different types of roles in the district. All of those require different relationships and work rules. So one of the expectations in any negotiations would be that we create a 2014 contract that reflects the work we do now, as opposed to one that might have been crafted earlier in response to those circumstances. The Board of Education, looking forward, has got some real concerns about what that contract will look like.
Concessions always a difficult issue to do in negotiations. One of the things that Remore has mentioned in the past is that he would be willing, I believe, to give up the cosmetic rider. Will that give enough cost saving to the district? Will that make a difference? And perhaps, if you can, what other concessions would you be seeking?
Well, I don't want to get myself into a position of negotiating here, but in general, healthcare. In all of its forms, you know, whether it's health insurance, riders, copays, types of coverage, every district is grappling with not only the cost of those programs, but the share of those programs with their employee groups. Healthcare can consume the negotiations. The perspective of the board, myself, is that why wouldn't we look at those areas to affect cost management? So that resources in the future could be diverted to other purposes, specifically our needs in professional development, staffing, and so on. The whole idea of over time, when you lay off teachers or lay off administrators, they go on a preferred eligibility list. So that there's not really the savings when you bring people back that one would anticipate. So just a variety of different ways, but it'll be, in the final analysis, it will be work rules, it will be legacy costs, paying for things into the future, and also current expenses.
What's your timeline?
I suppose with the bar already set at 12 years, we probably need to pick it up a little bit. But I would love to make significant progress during the time that I'm the interim.
One of the first official business meetings of the school board that you presided over a few weeks ago turned pretty chaotic. But you felt that there was more education topic that took part in that engagement of that meeting, even though it was a little bit unruly at times and a little confusing.
You know, I think part of the challenge to me and to the board is to put on the agenda the things that will focus the discussion. You can get buried in contracts about building maintenance and operation and so on and so forth, and those are all important. It's a large business we operate, many facilities. But a Board of Education is the only body that is solely responsible for the education of the young people that live in their jurisdiction, if you will. And little by little, we'll endeavor to, through the agenda building and through the actual management of the meeting, make sure that we focus on the things that are important, which is the trust that's been given to us as educators and as the governance body.
Do you feel you've made any breakthroughs with the minority versus the majority and some of the racial divide that's occurred between the two sides?
I'll say yes. If meeting individually and with groups makes the difference, and I believe it does. I mean, they need to express concerns that they have. I need to meet them and understand their perspectives. But then they need to understand me and the perspectives that I bring. Over time, I don't think there's any question that relationships will improve. The interesting thing is, if there are these differences and concerns that have existed over a long period of time, I think it's like climbing a slope. There's always the potential for sliding back. So you just need to keep gaining ground one foothold at a time, and that's what we intend to do.
There are so many topics I want to get to, but one more for you. Charter schools. Your views on charter schools and how it strengthens or takes away from the public school district.
Well, first, I'm the superintendent, interim superintendent of the Buffalo Public Schools. And that carries a substantial responsibility for strengthening the capacity of those schools to assist their students. So that will be my first and foremost effort. The law over the last decade or so has provided groups with the opportunity to create charters. Charter schools were premised on the basis that they could think out of the box. They could do things differently. Some have been successful at that. Others have not. We need to keep in mind that the support of those charter schools does require expenditures by the Buffalo Public Schools or any district that sends a student. So it's a case where, in a sense, student populations may shift, but so do the resources. So I'm concerned about that. And a pattern in that direction makes it tougher and tougher for the superintendent of the Buffalo Public Schools and that Board of Education. However, I'm an educator first, and I'm also committed to the parental prerogative. We live in an era of choice in every aspect of our lives, where we receive information, products, retail, so on. Schooling has gone in that direction as well. Charter schools have a distinct opportunity, a distinct advantage in the sense that they can start over. They can design what they do. They can go forward. And to the extent that that makes a stronger, sustaining school organization, that they live up to their charters, as an educator and as a parent and grandparent, you couldn't deny that opportunity. As the manager, as the administrator of the Buffalo Public Schools, I'm concerned about where our resources come from.
Superintendent Ogilvie, your title is interim. Will there be a search for a new superintendent? How soon will that be launched?
We have not had any discussions about when they'd like to begin that search. My contract calls for up to 2 years. It remains to be seen. But that was designed to provide for a variety of contingencies. Right now, we are looking for a few key staff members in the central office that will take on very important responsibilities, leadership of the instructional program, and serving as a kind of an alter ego and a support to the superintendent. I think within the next few months, I'll raise that topic with the Board of Education and take their temperature on how they want to approach it.
Interim Superintendent Don Ogilvie, thank you so much for sharing all your thoughts on education issues in our city district.
Thank you, Eileen. Again, it's a pleasure to be here.